Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Ryan Trukin, and today we have Arthur Hayes, CEO of BitMEX here, which is a Bitcoin mercantile exchange. Arthur Hayes is an incredible entrepreneur, and he gives really good insight into not only the idea of why you want to build a startup that makes money right away, but the environment that he's working in, the future of Bitcoin and mercantile exchanges, and why Asia innovates so well. He talks about his own experiences building a startup, his own focus on building something that makes money. The key point of advice that he gives to startups is absolutely fantastic about trusting and being confident in what you're doing. We talk about how the value of Bitcoin is being verified even though it's being robbed. It's being robbed because it's valuable, because it has something real, because it's something that's gonna last. And we also finish on why Asia innovates so much in fintech, so much in Bitcoins. I know we're talking a lot about fintech recently, talking a lot about Bitcoins, but this is a really valuable episode with one of the startups that won number one startup in Asia from Tech in Asia in 2006 recently. So this is a great, great level of insight here into Bitcoins, into fintech, into everything. And I'm really, really glad to have Arthur here. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hey, everyone. Welcome. We are here with Arthur Hayes. And I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a background on him, just as I always do. So Arthur was a finance major at University of Pennsylvania in the U.S. And he started immediately working for Deutsche Bank and Citibank in Hong Kong. That was 2008, 2013. In 2013, he decided that he was going to do the one thing he knew nothing about, which was Bitcoins, and started trading for 6 months Bitcoins all himself to learn everything there was about it. Then in 2014, he started BitMEX with his co-founder and did an 11-month build. In 2015, he joined China Accelerator with just some traction happening. And then in China Accelerator, it started working. Everything started coming together. Everything started building up. And now they're doing over $1.5 billion in volume, along with expanding aggressively. And it's a really good story of a startup that's hitting all of the things they want, that's making their own road in their own industry and building up. And even in 2016, they won the number one tech startup in Asia from Tech in Asia. So Arthur, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
So actually, we have during batch 8, where Arthur was in China Accelerator, his desk was just outside the podcast office. So he's actually heard almost every podcast that we've done. And we were always asking them to be quiet, but it's really good to have you in the studio this time. So Arthur, could you please explain what BitMEX is and what you guys do?
So BitMEX is a trading platform, and we allow retail investors around the world the ability to access financial products using Bitcoin and financial derivatives. So at our core, we're about financial inclusion for the 80% of the world who's not serviced by large financial institutions. And we believe a form of electronic, non-governmental sponsored, non-central bank sponsored money is the answer to allowing people around the world to access financial products that the majority of us probably listening to this podcast have easy access to.
Yeah. And so have you seen the type of user base? Like, what are you seeing right now in terms of your user base? What types of users are they?
Right now, we have mostly technologically savvy individuals. Mm-hmm. Someone who has Bitcoin, and now that they have Bitcoin, they're like, what do I do with this Bitcoin? And usually it's, let me speculate on what the future price of Bitcoin and other digital currencies is. And while that's great, that's not going to make us, you know, a multi-billion dollar company. We need to expand the type of people that we service to retail investors who have no idea what Bitcoin is, but they do have a pain point in terms of they want to trade or invest in certain types of financial products that aren't available in their primary jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. So how did you kind of come up with this idea? Because Bitcoins in Hong Kong and Asia is kind of a center for all this innovation. And you coming from the US, being planted here and then trying to think about this stuff, like how did that come around?
Well, I got into Bitcoin and I thought this was really cool. And I thought, well, what can I actually do to make a sustainable business doing Bitcoin besides just trading it? Mm-hmm. And I fell back on, I'm a derivatives trader, so why don't I try to create recreate what's existing in the traditional financial space in the cryptocurrency space. So it's literally a control C, control V, and then replace US dollar with Bitcoin. And we want to offer every single financial product that you can have in a traditional trading account using Bitcoin and other digital currencies.
Mm-hmm. So when you first started, it said it took you 11 months to build it. And then when you were in China Accelerator, you got the, we were saying before that you got the traction that you wanted and that you needed as an exchange. What was that like and how did that happen, do you think?
So we were lucky enough that we kind of shifted towards servicing professional investors to retail investors. And we had to make a few changes in the way we operated. And in October, November, December 2015, the price of Bitcoin spiked upwards.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to ride that wave and then establish ourselves as the premier institution for trading financial products and financial derivatives using digital currencies. And we've been able to basically ride that wave of user adoption and trading volumes into where we are today, where we're trying to expand into other types of financial products that are not just primarily trading Bitcoin and other digital currencies.
So let's get a little bit more in depth on that. What types of other financial products do you envision being able to be exchanged and Bitcoin's enabling? Or is it not just Bitcoins, but cryptocurrency? Or what is the future looking like for that?
We won't allow anyone who has any type of domestic currency, say renminbi, US dollar, and we want to give them a financial product that mimics something that they don't have access to. So for China, for example, you have lots of people who want to save their money in a stronger domestic currency besides the renminbi. We want to offer them internet savings products that give them a stable yield and that's safe. We're not investing in dodgy coal companies in, you know, Western China.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to give people safe internet financial products, whether that's investing in S&P 500 ETFs or FTSE financial products, something that they're comfortable with and that in the back end is backed by Bitcoin. They might not know it, but that's what we kind of use for financial structuring.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's still room for growth in terms of what you guys can do, or at least these markets and exchanges can do in terms of product offerings? Do you guys want to get into other things? I mean, we've had a lot of fintech on the podcast recently. We've had a lot of innovators. We've had even blockchain funds who don't even really talk about Bitcoins that much. Are there things that are blockchain or new currencies or things with value that you would want to put on that exchange? Because it feels like you could put almost anything.
We trade contracts. We don't trade physical anything. So as long as there's a market for buyers and sellers to come together and trade, we can create a market for it. And we collateralize these trades with a form of free value transfer, and that's Bitcoin. Now, in the future, Bitcoin might fail, and it might be another form of value transfer. We really don't care. As long as there's enough people who come on our platform with the same type of collateral who want to trade.
Okay, so what was it like first few days before, or let's say first months before you turned the corner and your exchange was really working? Like, what was your outlook, your perspective, your plan? And then after you finally started getting the traction and the users and the kind of visibility that you needed, did anything change? Did you pivot at all? Or did you have any different kind of difference in plan?
So I think we decided that we wanted to focus more on the retail side of the business months before we had any success in that particular field. Mm-hmm. So it was more being patient. We had a plan and executing it and seeing the results and not deviating from our plan before we either fell on our face or achieved success.
I mean, that's hard to do, especially when you're in China Accelerator and you're getting mentor advice from every single direction on everything you should do. I mean, how do you maintain that course? Like, was it routine? Was it focus? Or
I think it's just supreme confidence in what you're doing. I think that China Accelerator is a great platform to focus you on what you believe your vision is. And then you need to have confidence either in, failing very quickly in that vision or being successful. But questioning what you're doing is not really going to help you, because unless you have a demonstrable failure or success, then you need to just stick it out.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other, we actually kind of pinged you earlier this week for advice. Could you give some advice for people trying to do startups or even in the space? Like, what would you tell them to jump into the space and the market, this industry right now? or even a startup looking at doing their own thing, what would you say to them?
Build something that makes you money. I think a lot of people build startups to get funded, which is fine. But if you, the reason why you started your own business is probably because you wanted, you know, to make your own way, to have some sort of freedom that you didn't have in your 9-to-5 job at a large organization. But trading one master for the other, i.e. some venture capital fund or a plethora of venture capital funds, really doesn't sound that appealing. So I see a lot of my peers who build startups to get funded, and now instead of having a boss, they have a bunch of bosses
that all disagree with what you should do.
Exactly. And they own less and less of their company every 1.5 years. So I don't think that is a stable outcome for founders. And what you see is a lot of founders who pretty much just exchanged one master for another. And that really wasn't our goal in terms of a startup. We kind of came at this from not expecting to raise any money and trying to build something that actually made positive cash flow and that we had a return and we could pay people and pay a salary and have a sustainable business. So that was kind of our outset from the beginning.
Yeah. So some people might say that's very lucky that you got that, that you were able to do that. I mean, to find a startup that makes money right away. And I think you're making quite good money right now. You guys got some traction, but I've seen you and how hard you've worked. It's not luck. You guys have been really, really putting everything you have into this. What do you feel like was a breaking point for you and your company?
Well, we recognized that we had a vision of what we thought our customer base was. It didn't materialize to that. And we were lucky enough to be able to change before we, you know, had to go out of business, essentially. So
really? What was that pivot? What did you pivot?
So we were just targeting professional traders of Bitcoin financial products. We tried that for about 9 months and we didn't have any success. We read the market wrong. And so we came together as a partners, as a team, and we said, okay, well, this is obviously the wrong market that we're targeting. Let's target the other side of the market. And we had to make some changes to our technology. But in the end, that was what took us forward. Mm-hmm. And being able to recognize how we were failing and, you know, and change it as quickly as we could was what led to our success.
So let's talk about the industry for a little bit, the Bitcoin industry. I mean, there's literally Bitcoin exchanges getting robbed left and right right now, like the Wild West. Are these threats to you and what you do, or are you stable in consideration of this, or like what is the landscape look like?
So there, you know, we are a little different and we don't operate a traditional exchange. You can't actually buy and sell physically electronic goods on our website. Mm-hmm. You can trade contracts. So that allows us some flexibility in terms of the way we do security and handle customer funds that some of our other competitors or compatriots cannot, because they're expected to be something like a Bitcoin ATM. And if you buy some Bitcoin, you as a customer expect to be able to receive that Bitcoin immediately. And that has some security implications. Now, I think Bitcoin is very exciting. And yes, there are bank robberies happening on a regular basis, but it's still an exciting field. If you operated a bank at the turn of the 20th century, did all of banks close up and stop doing banking because there are some guys in stagecoaches robbing them? No, they continued innovating in security and you know, we have the banking system that we have today. So I think it's an exciting field. And the fact that somebody is robbing other people of this digital token that people say is worthless demonstrate that there is real value to what people are doing.
I mean, talk about Bitcoin just as it is. I mean, there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoins in circulation ever. I mean, that's what they said before when they doubled it in the past. I think they doubled it or they increased it by some amount. But it used to be much less and then they increased that. But do you think they're going to do it again? Or do you think that's it, 21 million? Never more Bitcoins.
I think 21 million. Yeah, so that's in the code.
Yeah, that's in the code. That's part of what it is.
So yeah, so I think Bitcoin will be 21 million. Now, whether or not Bitcoin is still around in 100 years, I have no idea. But I do think that the cat's out of the bag. And so digital currencies as a form of value transfer will exist well beyond 100 years from now. And that is what is exciting. Bitcoin, to me, is maybe the first contender. Maybe it'll fall on its face. But we don't really care because we believe that there's going to be some serious innovation. And because there's thousands of other alternative digital currencies, mm-hmm. one of whom could have the secret sauce to really generate a self-sustaining economy where people are sending and receiving Bitcoin and transferring value and paying for goods and services without actually touching traditional fiat currencies.
Mm. So I have a question about Bitcoin or blockchain contracts. Do you think blockchain contracts, people could actually buy into blockchain contracts and, like, let's say a contract to own land, property, a house, a lease, a car, things like that, and then trading that on an exchange, would that even be possible?
It's sure, it's possible now with Bitcoin. It just mm-hmm. depends on what is the legal ramification of trading assets on a blockchain, and that is what we don't know.
Mm.
And how different legal systems will handle it. How do you deal with someone in America collateralizing their land and selling it to someone, say, in China? What are the legal ramifications of that? How is that going to be treated? What's the legal status if you go to court? Is that contract going to be honored? And that's what we don't know. So, I mean, blockchain is essentially a very fancy database. You can do it now with what is existing today. The issue is, how do we deal with transfer value? How do we deal with what happens when this goes to court? And these are the issues that need to be worked out over the next decades.
Yeah. And then I guess I want to try to wrap it up with the last question, which is, why do you think Asia innovates so well with blockchain technologies?
Because Asia doesn't have a banking system that already exists for most places. So especially look at China, right? We had in the early 1990s, there was pretty much no banking system. And today you have a highly functioning one with credit and payments. And a lot of Asia has leapfrogged from the 60s, where really America dominated financial services and innovated greatly with credit cards and ATMs and these sort of things, to today, where if you look at the West, they have some of the worst technology in terms of banking systems.
It's just archaic now.
And China has some of the most efficient in terms of interbank payments, the ease. You have WeChat. People are paying, going to 7-Eleven and sending payments. So you have people who didn't have banking systems in the 60s and 70s, and now in this age where they can go completely digital, they've leapfrogged over all of the bad stuff and all of the inefficiencies that exist in the West. And I think that's why Asia is innovating. And Asia has to innovate because you have 2 billion people who have come from nothing to having some sort of affluence, and they can't experiment for the next 20 years of the banking system. They have to provide these people with some means of savings and transferring value between themselves.
Absolutely. It's like the spoils of the world go to the leapfroggers now, not the inventors, not the creators. It's all about the leapfroggers. I want to give you a chance to plug what you do, how people can get a hold of you, contact you. Thanks so much for being here. Just your moment.
What? So, if you want to trade different types of financial products, come to www.bitmex.com and acquire some Bitcoin. Learn how to use it. Transfer it between your friends. It's going to be the next wave, and you should get involved.
All right. Awesome, Arthur. Thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Thank you.
All right. So thank you to, as always, to Vivian, our producer, who's editing and making sure we sound great, to David, our sound guy, who makes sure that we hit all the right tones and notes. And then also thank you to you, our listeners. We couldn't do this without you. Thanks so much. And we'll see you guys around next show. Thanks. Hey, everyone. We want to give a shout out to our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in the East. They are a mentorship-driven program that takes your ideas from all over the world and helps you make them successful in China. At the same time, we take great ideas from inside China and help them grow all over the world. If you want to find out more, please visit www.chinaaccelerator.com, and batch 10 applications are going to be open soon, so it's a really good opportunity to get in there.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, PeopleSquared. PeopleSquared is the largest and best co-working space across China. They've got 8 or 9 spaces in Shanghai. They've got spaces up in Beijing. They've got spaces down in Shenzhen. They really are the best community of people to be dealing with here. So if you have a startup and you're coming to China, PeopleSquared is your number one choice.
And we'd also like to thank our syndication partner, Technode. They are the number one source for news and information about the startup ecosystem, what's going on inside of China. They also work with TechCrunch and helped publish and syndicate that. So we're really happy to have them on as a syndication partner. You can find out more at technode.com.